Welcome to the Global Sky Watch phone conference. We have plans to broadcast this over video live eventually. We're trying to get the system set up. I worked on it this weekend. Perhaps next weekend it will be set up, so future conferences will be simulcast on the net, on the web, so anybody globally can listen live. We do record these so that anyone can listen at any time after the event takes place by going to globalskywatch.com/go, G-O. Tonight we have a very special guest. Our guest is Francis Mengels, a retired scientist from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. He had 35 years of service. He has a bachelor's degree in forestry cum laude from the International School of Forestry at the University of Montana and a master's in zoology from Montana University. Additional education qualified him under CS for minors in botany, geology, chemistry, range, wildlife management, fisheries, entomology, hydrology, agriculture, ecology, environmental studies, parks, recreation management, soil conservation, and related fields of natural sciences. He's also part-time Sigma Pi and part-time college professor. I will let him talk a little more about himself and introduce himself. He did appear in the video, What in the World Are They Spraying? And Why in the World Are They Spraying? And so, Francis, thank you so much for taking the time to join us tonight.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you very much for the spot on the show.
Well, I'm so glad to have you here because I was so compelled. One of the parts of Why in the World Are They Spraying that stuck out in my mind was when you were on, and I could tell you were a little upset about what you were seeing happen to the environment. But before we get into that, is there anything you'd like to say to finish introducing yourself properly? I hope I did a pretty good job, but is there anything else people need to know about you so they know where you're coming from and who you are?
I think you did an excellent job there, so let's just get right into it, because I consider the questions of the listeners to be much more important than things about me.
All right. So in Why in the World They Sprang, when you made your appearance, when you started talking, I could tell that you were not happy about this issue. You were counting, doing environmental studies, it looked like, or at least looking at some very important information, like insect counts and how many insects were in the stomach of fish. How did you get involved in this issue? What brought you to this issue?
Well, one of the things that did it was just all of a sudden in my garden. I'm a master gardener now in my retirement, and I had been growing food in my yard. I've the original edible landscape guy, been doing it for 30 years, and just right about 2005, everything went to hell in the garden quite quickly. And then someone said, have you noticed that those plains up there that used to be, you know, the contrail used to be short, now they go clear across the sky? I said, yeah. And he said, have you noticed that it only does it on certain days just before fronts? And I said, yeah. He says, there's some sites on the web that says that there's stuff in them. And I said, oh. So I got my little backyard chemistry kits and stuff together and started taking soil samples, and all my soil samples were wrong, so to speak, and discovered that, wow, you know, my garden should be running at 5.6 pH in this kind of soil, and all of a sudden it's 6.5 and 7 close to neutral. And what happened here? Because I've been doing all the right stuff by putting things like pine needles and elemental sulfur into the garden, and here's the garden still setting around 7.0. And I thought, well, this is a mistake. It'll go down. And it didn't go down. And finally, about 07, 08, somebody started handing me some data sheets. And, of course, being a scientist, I said, I got to check this out myself. They might have, you know, not gotten the data right. So I did check it out according to my more stringent standards, and I discovered that these people were correct. And then I started running the samples on finding out what was in it and started doing some research. The website geoengineeringwatch.org was very helpful. And then after that, I think Skywatch came in about that time too, didn't it?
Probably about the same, probably a little bit later, but roughly around then, maybe.
Well, that was basically it. I was just noting some things that were happening that were very unnatural and strange in my garden and in the sky. And then somebody said, why don't you put your telescope on one of those, some of those jets going over, especially the ones with the long long trails on them. And I started looking at that. And then the guy pointed out, there, see that jet right there? That's military. I says, how do you know? He says, well, look at it through the telescope. It's all gray. There's no lines, no insignia, et cetera, on it, at least that we can see. And notice there's no windows down the side of the jet. It's just straight, obviously military. I said, yeah. And then he looked at me and said, since when does a two-engine military jet make three contrails? See that little lump under the fuselage? And he said, that's a nozzle. I started looking at it real carefully through the telescope. Telescope is a little jiggly to get that kind of detail. But we saw it, yeah. Since when does a two-engine jet do three contrails and the garden went to hell? And the contrails last 24 hours and more rather than disappearing in 20 seconds behind the plane or something like that. So I just started looking at it, started doing the research, started gathering the data, making more observations, seeing even stranger things going on up there. And it convinced me. You know, so the skeptic was convinced. I guess that's the bottom line.
Excellent. Okay. I know for me, Francis, what happened is when they started spraying, I lived in Jamestown, New York at the time, and I remember the day they started hitting us. It was on a schedule, and I can smell and taste them, and not just a little bit. It's absolutely overwhelming. It's like somebody's spraying aluminum or some kind of metallic dust in my mouth, and it burns my sinuses. I'm hypersensitive that way for some reason.
Well,
so
I got to tell you what. Let me interrupt, please.
Yeah.
This one is funny. Well, we have these five pet dogs and other dogs around the neighborhood, and the dogs were sitting there kind of thirsty, and I said, well, here, it rained last night. Let's just give them this rainwater. And those five dogs, we set the water before them. The five dogs kind of sniffed it. Some of them even lapped a little bit and gave us the dirtiest look you ever saw on five dogs' faces. I said, well, what's wrong? He said, well, just go in the house, get them fresh water. Maybe they don't like the fresh water. So he got some tap water for them. The dogs enthusiastically went for that. He said, maybe they don't like the bowl. So they dumped out the rainwater, put the tap water into the regular bowl, and they're still drinking it enthusiastically. And we tried that about a half dozen times, and these dogs won't drink the rainwater. So I think you're correct there, because you know, the dog ain't going to lie. He hates that water.
Yeah, and dogs have super sensitive senses of smell and taste. I know smell, but I guess taste as well. Is that correct?
Taste and smell are very closely connected in the brain.
Right, okay.
Essentially, if you can taste it, you can smell it, you can taste it. They're very, very similar neural connections.
Okay. Yeah, for me, it was absolutely overwhelming to the point where I remember having our employee, I had a few employees at the time, and I had to cancel meetings all the time because we usually had them in the afternoon about 4 o'clock just before we closed up, and they would spray starting usually at 3, and by 4 o'clock I was just, and they sprayed really low. They were real low, and it was just overwhelming. But
well, we have strong, every time we have a good spray day, you always have a strong influx of people into the local hospitals around here. And it's usually not the day of the spraying, but about 2 days, 3 days after they spray, just asthma people all over in the hospital. It's kind of like, what happened? Did everybody catch a cold on the third day after spraying? And there's a few other diseases that pop up that are closely related, but we notice the same thing that you're noticing over here in California. Big spray, going to have a bunch of people with lung problems in about 2 or 3 days.
Absolutely. And I've noticed there's different scents and different tastes that are associated with different types, obviously, because they have distinctively different, there seem to be specific different types. There's one type that I call the swamp water because it actually tastes like algae and mushrooms. It has that kind of a swamp water taste, which is why I call it that. And when they do that for 3 days, everybody here is sick. That particular type makes everybody sick. I mean, family, just everybody has like.
Well, Russ, I can't make a correlation for that, but I can tell you that in our chemical data that we have, it's not unusual to have. Well, the standard spray when it comes down is usually somewhere 1 or 2,000 micrograms per liter of aluminum, a couple hundred of strontium, a couple hundred of barium. But then again, we get some days where aluminum is zero and the barium and strontium is sky high. And then when we run full chemical panels of it, the lab reports come back with some secondary peaks of titanium and boron in it, as well as the usual high peaks of aluminum, strontium, and barium in there. And barium carbonate is rat poison, and that might be one of the items that's in there, because these appear to be hydroxides of aluminum, strontium, and barium, and some carbonates in there too. So I agree with you entirely that the military does not always use the same formula. My guess is when you get the titanium showing up, some of the titanium compounds are even more reflective than diamond. Their index of refraction is astounding. But aluminum is, frankly, dirt cheap, so usually it's aluminum. But there are some times when we get very high titanium showing up in some of them, too. Not always. But it's there. So we are seeing, must be at least a half a dozen varieties of chemicals in the varieties of combinations of chemicals in these sprays that are, at the least interesting. So I think the military is probably testing to see what works best and what they can do the cheapest.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I did a dust test and a water test here, and in the dust test we had very high aluminum. We had a lot of nickel, a lot of iron, and a lot of sodium besides the aluminum and barium.
We don't get sodium out here, but we do see peaks in iron, and we see a minor peak in nickel as well. We've been kind of writing off the iron in a lot of our samples because some of the astronomers in the outfit that I've talked to say, and I agree with them entirely, a lot of the iron might be meteor dust because the meteorites that land here, very, very high proportions of them tend to be some kind of an iron-based meteorite. So we think a lot of that iron that shows up is really just meteor dust, and we don't think that's part of the military, but we don't know, so we can't say for sure. But that's possibly where the iron has come from. And nickel, that shows up in traces in meteorites too. So we're not sure is the bottom line. We're just not sure because our access and our experiments and our sample gathering tends to be limited to what comes down in the rain and the snow. A sample from the earth or a sample from plants or a sample from horse manure or whatever doesn't really tell you a lot because you don't know what the animal's been eating or what's in the food, the commercial food they give to, say, hogs or chickens or something. You just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But we sure know what happens because the samples, the amounts that we see, if there hasn't been spraying by the military jets for weeks, and then you get an isolated thunder shower comes through and you get a water sample from that, micrograms per liter is very low in the rain sample you get from the isolated stuff. But if there's been spraying like mad, and then the front comes through, the first wash down after that front goes through is very, very heavily loaded with the usual aluminum, barium, strontium. So it's directly and absolutely correlated with the military spraying. There's no question about that, because this pattern has been repeating for the last, 8 years or so.
Yeah, I've seen here where about 12 hours before a big rainy front comes through, they spray us like crazy, the clouds pass, but they don't drop rain.
That happens here. You lucky people back east, because the nanoparticle that they use is so small. For the listening audience, a nanoparticle, I think, is 1/10,000,000th of a meter. You know, you're talking down getting close to angstroms, atomic units now. But this is so small, what happens when you spray that stuff at about 40,000 feet where the military jets are? This stuff grabs the water molecules that are free to form kind of a floating ice cloud, which is the chemtrail, you see, that lasts all day from the behind of a jet. And that stays up there enough, except for what must come down, and their mixes are always imperfect. I can tell you a lot about that later if somebody wants to question me about it. But the bottom line is the California, Oregon, Washington moisture, a lot of it gets hijacked by the nanoparticles, carries over the Rocky Mountains, and then it starts to sink as it heads down toward the Mississippi. Then it hits the Mississippi, and it's got to rise again to go over the Appalachians. And all those lucky people back in Kentucky, Tennessee, Mississippi, Georgia, those places, you guys get the benefit of all that California water. And that's why there's so many dang floods over there. You guys are stealing our California water in the military. Just kidding,
right.
Of course. I'm not blaming anybody for stealing, but the military steals the water from California skies and transports it to the other side of the Mississippi, and that's the function of the nanoparticle physically. And this, of course, is confirmed by multiple physicists in our organization. We talk to them and say, can this be so? And they say, yes, in fact, it's very probably so. So that's the story of your funny rain back there. Yes,
right.
The spraying does rob the rain immediately where they spray, but what goes up must come down. So where it dumps it, it usually dumps it like hell and all in one spot. And the spot is just between the east, probably between the Mississippi and the crest of the Appalachians is where it really dumps the California West Coast, Southwest, Great Plains, west of the Mississippi. All that water, it dumps it on the other side of the Mississippi, in the eastern half of the United States. That's all of our water that you guys are so happy to get.
Yeah, they did have a lot of flooding.
That's exactly what's causing the flooding. Is all those nanoparticle water from California.
Well, you know, one of the main reasons for our conference and for recording it and getting it out there, and one of my passions is getting this subject to the public, introducing the public to them and giving them evidence. What would you want to say to the public to say this is the evidence that we have? I know on geoengineeringwatch.org there's a whole page full of tests. And like you said just a minute ago, that you're able consistently to get aluminum and barium on the first rainfall you collect. What would you want to say to the public that tells you that this is really happening and it's not healthy, it's dangerous?
I don't know how to appeal to their emotional situation except to say that global warming is certainly causing some highly erratic weather. It's climate collapse. It's climate change would be a better name for it. And that's why you're getting all this erratic weather. And if you don't like erratic weather, you better do something about global warming. Now, I understand that most of the Republicans in Congress say that global warming is BS, and they're not going to believe it. Well, that doesn't negate scientific fact, and that 99.9% of the scientists in the world say global warming is real. Now, I'd say after that, the military knows it's real, and the military-industrial complex knows it's real, or they wouldn't be spending somewhere over $5 to $10 billion a year on geoengineering sprays with all these jets spraying aluminum, barium, and strontium. You know, they're not doing that for fun. They're doing that so the Shell Oil and Peabody Coal can keep on doing their thing and the oil party doesn't get interrupted. I wish I had something where I could, you know, a magic wand that I could wave and say, will you people please wake up and see what they're doing to you? Don't you know they're giving you Alzheimer's and autism like mad, not to mention the asthma? Don't you see what they're doing? Can't you wake up? And the bottom line where the average person can come down is realize, please, that this is happening. And number two, refuse to play the corporate conspicuous consumption game. That's so important, I'm going to repeat it. Refuse to play the corporate conspicuous consumption game. Start living frugally. Start living honestly. Start living neighborly. And if you're a Southern Baptist, well, I'd say, would Jesus poison their neighbors' air, food, and water? I don't think so. So with those arguments, I'd say, for God's sake, wake up, people. You know, you have plenty of good religious and practical and health reasons to try and stop the spray game that the military is foisting on us. We know for a fact it's going on, but when we call the military, they don't say anything. They won't even talk to you. Neither will Congress, for that matter. And I don't know whether it's because they're stupid or whether there's a plot. It could be either one and both. But I'd tell them that. Don't play the conspicuous consumption game. Start to live frugally. Get off the military-industrial complex treadmill and stop being a bunch of trained rats and start acting like human beings. End of statement. Rant, rant, rant.
Sure. I got. Now, what? Now you mentioned earlier that you saw your pH levels going up, 5.6, 6.5, 7.0. What does that mean? What makes that pH level go up?
Well, our natural soils in the area where I live, we have about four or five distinct soil types. This is the soil conservationist government man talking here. For the ecology to work properly in a black oak, Doug fir, ponderosa pine, white fir type forest, the pH of the soil has to be 5.6, which is fairly acid. That's pretty acid. Then you start dumping a compound that's very close to Pepto-Bismol coming out of the military jets on the ground. It shoots the acidity from 5.6 up to around 7.0. And when it does that, the ecology starts to go to hell. And we see plenty of signs of the ecology going to hell here in Northern California. And I'll list those if somebody wants to hear them. But that's what I mean. We've had it as high as 7.5. One time we hit 8.5. I said, that's impossible. It can't do that. And we contacted the homeowner, and she said, oh, well, that's spot where you did it. That's my flower bed where I empty all my wood ashes. I said, oh, wow, I'm glad. I said, by the way, ma'am, don't dump your wood ashes in the flower bed. It's bad for it, at least in this area it is. And so, what can I say? There's other things that are happening, some ecological results that are not fatal yet, but it's like smoking, you know. feels pretty good the first few years, but it's going to kill you eventually. Okay,
okay,
I'm
when
not
the,
sure if I answered your question.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. Now, when the pH goes up, pH, if I have my facts right, means potential hydrogen. So when the pH goes up, it's becoming more alkaline, right?
Yes, when we say up, it's the negative log of the hydrogen ion concentration is what pH is. So when it's a low number, below 7, it's acid, and what goes up to 14, and when it's 7 to 14, it's basic, and 7.0 is neutral, and that means an awful lot to the health of the human body and to the health of the ecosystem that it depends on to have that where it should be, whether it's an acid-type area or whether it's like just 5 blocks from here in a different soil type where it's a basic-type neutral soil. You know, it has to be where it should have been for the last 10,000 years. You can't go around changing the pH of an entire ecosystem lightly and expect everything to roll along normal. Things are going to change.
Can that elevated pH be attributed to aluminum being like free aluminum being brought down by rain into the soil? Is that how it works, or how does that work?
Well, it doesn't come down as free aluminum. It comes down as aluminum hydroxide, various types of aluminum oxide, probably Al2O3, and these are the aluminum oxide is the thing that really does it. Aluminum oxide, which is the stuff in, that we find it in the web, in the Welsbach type chemicals that come out of the jets. It's in the water. And aluminum oxides, of course, are there always, too. And you find that stuff in there. And it's a very interesting chemical, aluminum hydroxide, because it will take a highly basic stuff and drive it toward neutral. And it'll take highly acid stuff and drive it toward neutral. So aluminum hydroxide is pretty damn neat stuff, and it'll drive everything toward the middle. That's why if you pick up and read the label on a bottle of Pepto-Bismol or Aludrox or any of these stomach remedies they sell you on television or wherever, they love aluminum hydroxide. But you throw that kind of a compound into an ecosystem, it's going to drive everything toward neutral. And, of course, the common beer-drinking Willie out there is going to say, well, what's wrong with everything being neutral? That's good. Well, some ecosystems shouldn't be neutral. And some crops in your garden, like potatoes and tomatoes, should not be growing in neutral soils. You'll still get tomatoes and potatoes, but if you want a good tomato crop, all you home gardeners, or the farmer wants a good potato crop, he's got to keep his soil fairly acid. So that's the nature of the beast. And you start messing with pH and bad things happen. And we've done about 1,000 pH tests by meter and by simple hydrion papers, which you can get, by the way, at a cost of about 5 cents a sample. Just get the papers on the net, figure out, and read the directions. You can get a pH meter for a couple hundred bucks. I don't like the meters. I like the papers because they're carry around easier and you don't have to mess with it, and they're accurate enough for all purposes. But I hope I'm making the point.
When
if you mess with Ma Nature, she's a very harsh mistress.
So aluminum hydroxide drives everything towards neutral.
Yes, that's correct.
And so that's going to really mess up some agriculture. That's going to mess up some gardens. That's going to mess up some ecosystems because some don't like to be neutral. Do I have
that's
that right?
That's absolutely
then?
Correct. You got it right there.
Okay. Now, what you mentioned just a few minutes ago that you have seen damage. Let's wake up some of the people out there. What are you seeing happen?
Well, like I mentioned in my garden, when I first started the garden, about 03, I was getting some great potato yields and some just more tomatoes than I could handle. Well, we're planting even more tomatoes and potatoes now, and we're getting about a fourth as much as we used to get, even though we've practically quadrupled. You know, we've planted four times as much ground with tomatoes and potatoes, and we're getting about one-fourth the yield that we got back before chemtrailing started in. And that's what getting rid of the acidity does to a garden. Strawberries, blueberries, our production is kind of going to hell, and we just don't. I look at it and I say, God, I'm throwing elemental sulfur in there to try and get the acidity back up. I'm putting in pine needles to try and get the acidity back up. I'm using black oak, which, you know, how much more acid can you get? I'm working in black oak mulch, which is fairly acid, trying to get the acidity back up. And sometimes it works a little bit, but aluminum hydroxide is just one hell of a buffering agent. Look on the bottle of Pepto-Bismol or something like that, or any stomach remedy, I'll bet you that just in most cases, aluminum hydroxide will be there. And I just don't know how to overcome it. So we plant a lot of tomatoes and we get enough to eat, but, it's kind of like a losing battle. And then the bees are disappearing. We don't know if that's part of it. And you get some different bugs showing up, good and bad ones, that never were there before. You know, 30 years of gardening, and then all of a sudden they show up immediately after the chemtrailing. You know, there's a correlation. I can't say it's chemtrails, but I can sure tell you that they didn't show up till the chemtrail started and the pH changed. And things just got weirder and weirder. And, of course, the dogs, like I said, won't drink the water. They've got to have tap water now or they won't drink. Songbirds, you know, new species are showing up, and some of the old reliables are disappearing. The only thing consistent in the birds we see in the garden anymore is you still see a lot of crows and jays because they live on garbage and roadkill. But the songbirds, highly erratic, and a lot of the old standards just, you know, where in the hell did the birds go? You think Rachel Carson revisited with Silent Spring. Just all these things are going to hell. And I'm scratching my head and saying, what in the world is, you know, what in the world are they spraying to make sort of a pun? Very, very strange things going on. I suppose you could blame it on global warming, but these are very strange things.
Now, I've had a lot of people contact me saying that they're having trees just die, trees that they've had for long periods of time. And this is across the country because I'm in touch with a lot of people. A lot of people contact me. I get a lot of email from people, and they tell me what's going on. Can this be right up the same alley? Can this be a chemtrail issue, really?
Yes, I've looked at it. And what's happening out there is you go out with your little axe and sometimes your shovel and usually a Pulaski to get through the duff layer out in the soil because, you know, 35 years with the Forest Service talking here. And what's happening, apparently, is all trees really do have some kind of fungal association or mycorrhizal association in their roots. You know, those little webs of white stuff that you see in the soil when you dig into a forest soil, little runners of fibers, almost invisible to the eye, but if you look closely, you can see them. Trees got to have that on their roots to absorb water and minerals correctly. And what I see going on is these mushroom-type, fungus-type, I'm using variety words to try and get the audience to understand what I'm saying. These are disappearing. And when those go to hell, a lot of the trees that got to have it go to hell too. So there have been many cases around here of the same thing. Yeah, look it. There's a whole, you know, that one whole species of tree is all white fir is going to hell. It's drying out and dying. Or you see, you know, just that one hillside that used to be so full of lodgepole pine. Boy, the beetles sure tore the dickens out of it last winter, didn't they? And then you have these wonderful salvage sales with the Forest Service, or blowdowns because of root fungi of various types. Black stain is particularly bad around here. Armillaria is very bad around here. But you start messing up the mushrooms that the trees got to have. The trees get sick. And when the trees get sick, the bugs go after them. And when the bugs go after them, you have some wonderful salvage sales. And if you don't salvage them, you get these really outrageous wildfires. It's all a web. It's all connected. It's all in the mix. And
yeah, so
it's kind of
one.
Complicated, but this is exactly what's going on. And I wish to the dickens that the American public was smart enough to catch on. Or maybe the times are so rough economically, they got other things to worry about. But I wish they'd catch on to what the military is doing when they spray that stuff. You can't go around changing the pH without messing up stuff.
Mm-hmm. You know, I live outside Bangor, Maine, and I've seen, and I've always been interested in plants. I used to grow cactus and, you know, things when I was a kid. I thought they were cool. I just started gardening 3 years ago. I'm really trying to learn and have made a lot of good progress. Something I've never seen before, is when you drive through Bangor in the late summer, fall this year, and this happened over the last few years, I've never seen anything like this before. There were big black spots on the leaves of trees everywhere.
Predisposed to various fungal infections.
Yeah, and it was so prevalent that it almost looked animated. You just look around, and there were just thousands and thousands of these spots, all these trees, and we didn't get the beautiful colors in the fall. Things just go kind of pale yellow and then brown, and they have all these dark spots all over the place. And I've talked to many people in different parts of the country who are seeing this who've never seen it before.
We see this over here too on various plants, various mildews and molds, and some of them are spread by bugs, which are aided and abetted by an ecosystem in distress, and some of them spread by air, some of them spread by various humidity agents. And you can expect a lot of this when you start messing with an ecosystem, and that spray that's coming down is one of the primary factors that's messing with the ecosystem. And that is why I have said from the time I started to get involved, when I started to figure it out back around 2005, that I want NEPA. I want an environmental assessment. I want an environmental impact statement. If somebody's going to spray this kind of junk on top of my head, I demand my constitutional rights for these people to tell me, well, what exactly are they spraying? Has anybody looked at the side effects and justify what you're doing? And I haven't seen anything of the sort from either Congress or the military except silence. They don't say yes, they don't say no, they just, you know, that's nice, you wild-haired hippie. I'm not a wild-haired hippie. I'm going bald, for crying out loud. and I've got enough qualifications. You know, if I'm not even sure what I ought to say this, but hey, I'm in Mensa. I'm in Intertel, which is the next step above Mensa. I've looked at this. I've done my homework. I've done the figures. I've run the numbers. I've done the studies. It's real. It's really, really happening. The reports are there. The telescopic observations are there. Ex-military men are telling us it's there. We're getting stuff from Georgia. We're getting stuff from New York. We're getting stuff from the United Kingdom. We're getting stuff from New Zealand and Australia. We're getting stuff from the Hawaiian Islands. We're getting stuff from Canada and Alaska. We've got a database of samples all over the world, and we say, what about this Pentagon? And
right, if it was
yes,
one isolated
we'll get
area,
back to you, and they never do.
Right, right. I want to open this up for Q&A for people to
yes,
ask
sir.
Questions. So if you have a question for Francis, please press *6 on your phone, and you'll be put into the Q&A queue. So let me just enable that. Okay. Okay, so the Q&A session is now started. So if you have a question, press star 6 on your phone, and you'll be able to ask Francis a question directly. And while these people are lining up, you know, this is one of the amazing things I've seen is that we have NASA now providing children with cloud charts in school. We have all of this stuff showing these long, persistent trails, and all of this, I call it disinformation, trying to teach children now that this is perfectly normal stuff. And the way that I know it isn't normal stuff is because I can smell it and taste it, and I have never in my life, you know, being someone who's been real sensitive all my life, I know what the air smells like around the sea. I know what, if you have an animal in your house, I understand the scents. I mean, I've lived with this all my life.
Now, you ought to see what the cats are like, meticulous groomers. The cats go sick and crazy. Something else, if you want to talk about weird, you know, like all of the jets that go over Northern California, the commercial jets go north and south. We get asterisk patterns. We get checkerboard grids. You can see them on the satellite, weather satellites, for crying out loud. You know, since when did a commercial aircraft do a checkerboard grid or fly circles and loops not over airports or fishhook patterns or any of those weird-looking patterns of contrails? You know, a tic-tac-toe in a circle. Obviously, they're doing something. You know, this is not normal commercial traffic. And the flights, you know, and of course we can put our telescopes on the planes when they go either, you know, you can't see them when they're directly overhead, but if they're off to the side, you can see no windows. That's the military jet. And all the military jets are spraying. And I've had the pleasure of being on a mountaintop, and the jet went by just about a quarter mile away from me. And I said, "Look at that guy." And the guy said, "Yeah, you just watch. He'll come back this way about 20 minutes, and he won't be spraying." And you're sure enough, about 20 minutes later, same jet, same numbers, same, absolutely the identical, positive identification, same altitude, same elevation, went right back just a little bit higher than his previous chemtrail back toward the Air Force Base at Klamath Falls. And I just kind of said, "Well, I'll be damned, you know. It certainly isn't atmospherics that's causing it, is it? And that is a scheduled military flight." Okay. You know, we know it's going on. We just call the military and say, "What was that guy doing flying over there around Montgomery Creek, California? You know, how come, you know, he's spraying going over, spraying going back?" To, "Sorry, sir, we'll get back to you." And they never do.
Yeah, and here in Bangor, a lot of these military jets that are spraying fly in formation. I've seen four across many times. Not unusual. In fact, I've got pictures posted.
Yeah, on time-lapse photography that we have from our various mountaintop stations here in California, they show a time-lapse, you know, through the weather through the day, and it looks like tracer bullets going as each jet goes over, followed by one set over, you know, about a couple of miles, and another one set over a couple of miles. It looks like a row of tracer bullets going across the TV screen from their spraying.
Yep, I know exactly.
And you know it's not commercial. Commercial jets don't do that.
Yep. And also one thing I'll mention, too, is that I saw this happen twice. I'll mention this real quick so it's on tape so people can hear this. Is when I lived in Jamestown, they sprayed us horribly. In fact, I moved out of there because I was getting very, very sick from it, and they were just spraying horribly. I saw one day where they went from all long trails to short trails. They were coming. I knew their schedules. I knew when they were going to come. I knew when they were going to leave because they sprayed on schedules. And so I could predict when all this was going to happen. One day they stopped for 4 days, which I thought, oh, maybe this is over, because it was horrible for me. It was just torture. And then on the fifth day, they came back, same schedules, same jets, but guess what? All the trails were short. I moved to Bangor in 2008 because of how sick it had made me. I still own my house in Jamestown, by the way. I moved so quickly, I didn't have time to sell it. Here, same thing happened. They started in 2008, after I moved here this summer. They were spraying pretty heavily, not as heavy as Jamestown, but the scheduling was there. Persistent trails, they were covering the sky. Bangor Globe did a story, said we had the dimmest summer in history. You know, what's happening? Gee, they're all scratching their heads. And then one day, instead of a four-day break, overnight, the next day, all the same jets, all the same schedules, but all the trails are short. Very interesting.
Yeah, we notice the same thing over here periodically, like the two engine trails will be white, but the one coming out of the belly of the plane, out of the nozzle, will be brown, black, blue, or sometimes tinged a little pinkish.
Really?
So we know that, you know, something funny's going on. Sometimes you get a contrail. You can see little particles of something descending from the contrail, from the persistent contrail that you left. You know, you can see all kinds of interesting things going on that, you know, these things aren't commercial flights. And like I said before, the whole thing is to keep the big oil, big coal party going a little bit longer so these people can make their profits off of us poor plebeians here until the big industry and its military-industrial complex can get its thing done and do its thing. Whatever they've got planned, I'm not sure, but I don't think it's a plot or a conspiracy. I think it's just basic stupidity. You know, we're going to do this because we're going to try and combat global warming everywhere we can and as much as we can. But reality check is nobody's looked at the side effects. I could go at length into side effects. Have we got questions yet? Or?
Yes, we do. I was just going to bring that up. Yeah, I'm a little bit more on the conspiracy side. I've just been putting pieces together for a few decades now, and just the corruption is just unbelievable. But we've got a whole mix of people. We've got people lined up. So can we take our first call? And I would love to talk to you. Time goes so quick. I'd love to hearing about the science and the pH and understanding this, because I'm trying to become a gardener, and the information you have is so valuable. And it's just
okay.
I wish I could.
A short thing is on something I emailed to you is a document called Geoengineering What We Know that has a summary and much more additional data on the things we mentioned. And I would advise anyone who is a non-scientist to read that, because it's put in language that ordinary people can understand. I'd like them to read that paper. It's only 3 pages of bullet statements, Geoengineering What We Know.
I've got it right in front of me. In fact, is this something that I can
condensing, post publicly? It's condensing volumes of lab reports and observations into short statements. This is what we know. This is what we found out. This is what we observed. And those short statements, I think, say the whole world.
Awesome. Can I post this publicly on our website?
Certainly. I encourage you to do it.
Thank you. I have it right
in front of me. You know, every politician has an opinion, and one man's opinion or one lady's opinion is as good as another. But facts are facts are facts, and you can't say a fact is false by just saying I don't believe it, which is
basic. I'm looking at it right now. It's excellent information, very condensed, and it's just showing the contamination everywhere from your tests. It's just incredible. Well, okay, I'll tell you what, if you have a question, we have some people lined up for a question. If you have a question, press *6 on your phone, and let's go with our first question. When you hear your phone, the voice on the phone say you're unmuted, go ahead with your question. So here we go. Go ahead with your question.
Hello?
Hi, yeah, thanks for calling. You're on. Go ahead with your question.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Oh,
go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't hear what you said, the announcement. Francis, I have a question for you regarding the buffering action of the aluminum hydroxide. I wondered if it's possible to treat the soil with, say, an organic acid such as citric acid. Would that have an effect on that buffering mechanism that's going on in the soil?
Very temporary at best. You don't underestimate the power of aluminum hydroxide. Citric acid is a fairly strong organic acid. You know, you're talking stuff like lemon juice here. But it's not going to last.
Okay.
Thank you for your question, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thank you. And let me get our next question on here. And tell me, caller, did you hear your phone say you're unmuted just now, or did you not?
Russ, it just went to me. Mark Mallory in Southern Utah. Can you hear me, Russ?
Yeah, Mark, how are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Francis. Thanks again for being with us. I do a lot of hiking. I live in the Southwest, and I'm an avid hiker, backpacker, and I don't know if it's my imagination or not, but lately when I'm out hiking, when the chemtrails break up enough to let the sun come through, it just feels more intense on my face. It's a winter sun, obviously. It's December, January. And I'm just feeling a lot of what seems just like a hotter sun on my face. Well, Dane Wigington and other people like him who have looked into the effects of particulates on the ozone have led me to believe that, in fact, global warming is most likely...
You're taking the words right out of my mouth, man. You know what's going on.
They're ripping the ozone.
That's so correct.
Here they've got, through the media, the mainstream communist news network, et cetera, all running around worried about each other's tailpipes causing global warming. And yet these jets are burning millions of gallons of kerosene a day, and in addition to all the heavy metallic particulates they're putting up there, I think the global warming is mostly attributable to these spraying jets. What are your thoughts?
Well, put it this way. The heat that you're feeling on your head, yes, we get it up here in Northern California, too, and all up and down the West Coast. When I visit Montana and the Rocky Mountain states for relatives, it's the same thing. Yes, you are correct. It is thinning the ozone layer considerably. I don't know what the present state of the ozone layer is over the United States, but I think it could stand some looking into to see what the effects of the geoengineering military jet spraying is doing. And the second part of your question, what's causing global warming? Well, there's no question that global warming was well upon us before chemtrailing started. So I'd still attribute the effect of global warming mostly to carbon dioxide. And then within the last 10 years, I'd say that the carbon dioxide has been aided and abetted considerably by methane discharge. So if I were to place, you know, what are our two baddies, I'd still say it's carbon dioxide and methane that's causing the global warming, and not the spraying as such, but the spraying is contributing to sunburn and various other interesting effects because it's wrecking the ozone. Now, I'd like to see a study somewhere, if anybody's good at this sort of thing. I wonder what the present state of ozone is over the United States and over such countries as the UK, where they're spraying a lot. You know, what's the variation immediately after spraying or after a long period of non-spraying, if there is such a thing anymore? You've got an excellent question, and you pegged it just exactly what's going on. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, Francis.
Thanks, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next caller, you are on.
Yeah, this is Ann. Ann Fillmore, Dr. Fillmore on the Oregon coast. Can you hear me?
Yes,
yep.
Excellent, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm at... as Dane said last week, Oregon coast, central Oregon coast, we are chemtrail central. We get it the worst of anyone. My question is sort of off from all of the, although my garden really sucked last year. It just really sucked. I had no zucchinis. They melted on the vine. It was awful. But my question has to do with the primary complaint that I've been getting, because a lot of people talk to me about being a behavioral scientist. They want to know, how come I'm so dizzy? What is the vertigo? And I know about inner ears. I know that if you mess with your inner ear, you mess with our whole sense of reality. That's where reality comes into fore, is how we stand up, what we see, how we, you know, function. And boy, whatever is happening, and I don't know what it is, can you tell me what is going on that causes the massive vertigo? And I'm having it.
I can offer you a hypothesis,
okay,
but I can't give you a precise physician's answer, so understand that.
Okay.
But aluminum, barium, strontium, especially the aluminum, is notorious for causing neural disorders of various sorts. And
yes,
that is why,
yes,
you look at Northern California here, you know, we used to have autism at the rate of about 1 in 10,000 in the 1990s. And now it went to 1 out of 100. And Alzheimer's in Redding, California, according to the City Health Board, is now 1 out of 8 for men and 1 out of 4 for women.
Holy
And it's attributed, I think, one of the factors most definitely is all that damned aluminum and barium and strontium coming down on you. You know, you're not just drinking the aluminum, because our water is generally aluminum-free, but when you're breathing it constantly all day, I think there's something going on, and the problem with that is kind of like smoking and tobacco. Some people are just highly vulnerable to neural damage, and some people seem to take it forever. You know, the tobacco company says, here's Grandpa Fred. He smoked for 90 years, and he's still hale and hearty. Well, maybe Grandpa Fred is one of those very resistant individuals. And I say, well, here's Louis McDougall, and he's dead at 28 from smoking. You know, it's, and here's one person, she's got vertigo at 30 years old, and here's another person said, never had it in my life. It's all a bunch of fakeroo. Well, both people are correct, just that there's a high degree of variation. But I can tell you that because I do have the master's in zoology, and I taught human anatomy and physiology as a graduate student. And so I've got the qualifications to tell you. The bottom line, I repeat, aluminum has a lot to do with neural disorders, and I'm sure the barium and strontium is not helping the situation, and some people are just damned unfortunate that they're vulnerable, and I don't think the military gives a damn, and I'm sure the military-industrial complex, because we don't have any public health system, doesn't give a damn either. So all I can say is, gee, I'm sorry, and
yeah, well,
I wish to hell that they'd have a EIS on this stuff so they would have looked at it before they started, but I don't see any tendencies in the United States Congress or even the California legislature to say, we want this looked at before you spray us more, and you can bet they're going to do it to us some more.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, ma'am, but I really think a lot of it's this aluminum coming out.
Aluminum.
At us.
And
some people are vulnerable,
really
and some people get sprayed harder.
We get sprayed all the time now. All the time. They spray the rain clouds. They spray the fog. It is constant here. It is unremitting. It really is.
Well, the only thing I noticed when they quit was when they had Katrina. They pulled a lot of military jets and military aircraft down there to take care of some darn thing or another, or when they had the big twitch with the Iran war, stuff like that. A lot of the military jets disappeared, and the amount of aluminum, barium, strontium in our rain samples went way, way, way down during that period. But then after Katrina had more or less passed, and the war in Iraq had kind of passed over, or whatever they were doing over there in the Middle East passed over, the military jets came back with a vengeance and just pounded us. I'm talking like 100 skyline to skyline contrails per day, and it's usually in the advance of some kind of weather front. And they love the Oregon Washington, Northern California coast, because we're in the path of most of the storm track that goes across the United States and sends the rain into our Midwest. So if they can spray this main storm track in Northern California, Oregon, Washington, then they can get a lot of lift for their nanoparticles to carry it all the way across the country and get the benefit of all that sunlight screen from their nanoparticles until it's time to drop down into the Mississippi Valley, start to ascend the Appalachian coast, and rain like the dickens all over all the wonderful, I don't know, what do you want to say, Confederate States of America. I'd say it's about time for them to get on their knees and pray to Jesus to make that stuff stop.
Yep.
Because I'm sorry, ma'am, but I really think the aluminum might, neural problems might be a possible reason. You might want to check, I would suggest, a hair sample sent to a lab, maybe a blood sample. Have them look at it for aluminum, barium, strontium, see what's in there.
One thing, though, that the last 3 weeks they did three different kinds of sprays, and we had, I'm almost convinced that we're being experimented on here as to what they're going to do back east. They do it here first because everyone was sick. I mean, we're talking terrible, in quotes, flu type stuff.
Yes, we have that here in California as well. About 2 or 3 days after the heavy spraying begins, hospitals are loaded with people with asthma,
packed.
Dizziness, yeah. Stomach sickness, all that kind of stuff. And I think it's from breathing this stuff.
The one interesting note here that the doctors in this little town right here on the coast have given up treating the flu. And the last I've checked with, now I don't go to the doctors, I know how to do it, but some of the people I checked with who are moaning and groaning, they said, yeah, we got the antibiotics, but now the doctors are giving out Dramamine. So I thought that was just a hoot. They're giving out Dramamine.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your call, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
I think that there are some there are some neural problems that are developing, and I'm not sure that the powers that be care to look at it.
All right. Well, thanks for your call.
Thank
One thing
you.
I would throw into the mix is I had mercury poisoning most of my life from my amalgam fillings, had them removed in 2000, and all the physical and emotional problems I ever had vanished, most of them overnight. I was perfectly healthy, felt like Superman, was no longer afraid to speak in public, no longer afraid of confrontation. My reading comprehension was great. My mind didn't race anymore. When chemtrails started, every single mercury symptom I had came back. I also found that there were articles talking about mercury soils and mercury levels in soils across the country rising. Mainstream media was blaming it on Chinese power plants. Mm. California Air Quality Resources Board, I don't think I have that name exactly right, said no, the metals are not coming from Chinese power plants. Just to throw that in the mix, in some of the symptoms are very specific, like elevated dihydrotestosterone, which is specifically known to be mercury related. But go ahead.
We actually looked at the rainwater periodically for mercury, and all I can say is we're not finding it here on the West Coast. But I think what's happening back east is every time you burn coal, or anywhere there's a coal plant, expect mercury pollution downwind. And Peabody coal is probably responsible for most neural disease in this country because of the mercury that comes out of the smokestacks of a coal-fired generating plant. Whether they're burning it in Montana or Wyoming or Pennsylvania or down south, that's probably the mercury source, but we did check the signature of the isotopes from the stuff in China. We just flew the Sea of Japan, and they checked to see what was going on. And no, that's not what's coming over. The stuff that's coming over that's eventually reaching us doesn't have enough mercury on it to be meaningful. So it's not. And this is some data from Mount Rainier. And we're just not getting it. So I don't think you can blame the Chinese for the mercury. I think that's our own boys that are doing that.
Well, the thing that I'm experiencing is, and I want to get this on tape because I really want people to explore this, is when they spray, I will have symptoms specific to mercury toxicity, and which is something I'm very, very, very familiar with and have studied for a long time now.
Well, again, mercury is a neurotoxin, much like aluminum, so I would suggest there is a connection there, but I'm not sure what it is.
Right, right. And I also know that many of the symptoms like hyperactivity, your mind starts racing, you can't focus, you can feel very depressed, and it interacts with things like coffee and sugar. Like Dr. Haley talks about how the caffeine molecule can surround it and makes it more bioavailable, so caffeine interacts with it. This is why if you drink tea or something with caffeine or have sugar, tinnitus can skyrocket. Very, very fascinating subject. And for me, yeah. I just find it, I listed about, 35 symptoms, most of them specific to mercury, that occur exactly in sync. And in Maine, I don't believe we have any coal-burning power plants, but they occur in sync. And so I will start having those symptoms when specific types, there's two types, one of them I call the acetone type because it smells and tastes like acetone, and that type always causes mercury symptoms. So I thought I'd throw that in the mix. It's very fascinating, and also that mercury causes a lot of emotional and mental impairment, such as not being able to focus, mind races, songs keep going through your head, forgetfulness, you can't remember why you went into the kitchen.
Aluminum does, I'll tell you right now, aluminum can and does do the same thing as a neurotoxin, but aluminum isn't near as vicious as mercury. And I would believe this very easily from what I've seen of what mercury can do to a neural system. And like I said, these autism rates that I just related to what's going on in Reading for autism. Autism is just you lay down on the floor and roll over. You can get some aluminum poisoning that'll make kids practically climb the walls. Anything can happen with aluminum mercury poisoning. Just expect a lot of disorders. And I would point a very long and accusatory finger at the military-industrial complex for this aluminum stuff.
Yeah, not only that about the aluminum, but Dr. Haley has also talked about how when you have existing mercury toxicity, that may not be, maybe it's not even presenting real vicious symptoms, but when you mix aluminum, it increases the toxicity or bioavailability 100 times. So the two together are much worse, which is why they were real upset with having aluminum and mercury together in vaccines.
Yeah, that's what they call a synergistic effect. You know, one enhances the other to make it work. Example of common synergy is you mix caffeine with acetaminophen, basically Tylenol, mm-hmm. and it enhances the effect for some reason. I'm not sure why, but you throw the caffeine into the pill with the Tylenol, and you get, I can't remember the name of the dang drug now, but it makes the headache pill twice as effective.
Right. Okay, well, let's go on to our next call so we can get through our calls and get your questions to you. Here we go. Okay, next caller, you're on.
Yes, good evening, Francis. This is Simon Roper in Daytona Beach, Florida. Thank you for this call. It's great information. I've got a question. Is there a website that locates military bases that are responsible for this? And also I'd like to comment on diatomaceous earth and chlorine dioxide when you're done answering.
Okay. I'm not sure. I didn't take notes on that. But the answer to the first one, is there a website that locates the military bases that are doing this? And the answer is, I don't know of any, but from where you are, just watch the contrails of the jets and where they head. And around here on the West Coast, the military jets are coming out of Sacramento, the Bay Area, Portland, and probably Springfield, Eugene area, and some minor amounts from Klamath Falls, Oregon, is where you'll see the jets land after they've been doing some stuff. So you can watch and find it, but I'm not aware of a website as such. Diatomaceous earth is merely a silica that's ground up old sea urchins, and basically it's diatoms, and a lot of the diatom parts that are persistent are little tiny, tiny slivers of silicon dioxide. Essentially, it's sand. And they're not letting out diatomaceous earth out of the jets or anything like that.
Oh, no, no. This was for the heavy metal poisoning.
I've never known anybody to use it for that, although I've heard of diatomaceous earth being used in filters, but I haven't heard of any sort of that as a cure or a remover of poisons in the system. I don't quite understand your question.
It would be food-grade diatomaceous earth.
Not familiar.
Okay.
Don't
and there's
know.
Also a product called chlorine dioxide, MLF.
It's chlorine dioxide is essentially bleach.
Oh, it's a kind of, but it's also, yeah. it's like a chelation product.
No, I can't answer anything to the result of that and how it would relate to geoengineering or various health problems from geoengineering. I'm sorry, I can't help you on that.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for the call. I have heard of silica-type products being used for mercury chelation, but it's not mainstream. But I have heard people talking about successes with it. But other than that, it's not, you know, not one of the mainstream chelation modalities that I'm aware of. Okay,
well,
next caller,
you hear about
on?
Such things here in Northern California. But I look at a lot of it, and there's something that whispers, might be fake, might be fake. This could be just a litmus-type reaction, just a pH coloring-type reaction, like these microessentials lab papers that I use, narrow-range pH papers, to determine the acidity of soils. And I'm very familiar with them, used them 1,000 times maybe or something like that. And a lot of it could be just a reaction like that in a foot bath or something like that. I've actually seen it. And I'm suspicious of it. I'm not sure that it works. And I'm not convinced yet. Somebody will have to show me by a blood sample taken before. Then they do the foot bath, take a blood sample immediately after, see if it's gone down.
They said the silica... or the diatomaceous earth, is that largely silica, you said?
Yes, that's what it
okay.
is. It's basically, it's dried up diatoms. It's the skeletons of diatoms, the free-floating algae in the ocean that are now being pretty much destroyed by global warming.
Okay, that's interesting. All right, next caller.
Francis?
Yes, ma'am.
This is Lexi Hunter.
Hey, Lexi, nice to hear from you again. What can I do for you, Lexi?
Well, I wondered, have you gotten anybody up on the mountain to take a snow sample recently?
No, not yet.
Okay.
But we're intending on, I'm going to go up there if I have to do it myself, and I'm trying to get some Forest Service people to bring me a snow sample down from way up high. I did get some from last year. Is that what you mean, like recently?
Yeah, I meant like, you know, in the last month or so.
No, not recently like that. But we did get one from last summer. Angelina went up, got me a sample from about the 8,500-foot level on Mount Shasta. Came down just like all the rest of them, aluminum, barium, strontium in the thousands of micrograms
right.
per liter.
And I guess my other question is, how are the fish that you scooped up from the lined pond there at Danes?
They died, quite bluntly.
Wow, okay.
We had them in an aerated water tank, and they died.
Okay.
as much as we can say. These were gambusia for the listeners, African mouth breeders, various minnows. And we just thought we'd take a look at them. I haven't contacted Dane, so I don't know how his native stock is doing. And I can't blame that on the chemtrails or not. It just could have been something we did. I'm not sure. But that's what happened to them. But they lived for quite a long time.
You know, I've been down here in the Phoenix area for the last couple of months. And I have to tell you, it is completely brutal out here. On a daily basis, we're being hammered here. I can see very clearly the air traffic coming in and out of the Sky Harbor Airport and, you know, the commercial jets. There's a pattern to it, of course, on arrival and departures. And the unmarked tanker jets to
the
west of town.
That'd be the military jobs.
Yeah. But quite possibly.
Do you know if they're KC-135s and KC-134s? Military guys around here keep on saying, identifying these various military jets as 135s and 434s.
Can't tell you that. I will tell you that they are, as usual, unmarked tanker jets, possibly subcontracted out by to Evergreen Air here, although there are Air Force bases here in the Arizona area. But I just want to reiterate that even though when I was up in Northern California in your neck of the woods, it was brutal there, it is just as bad down here in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And daily pummel action, typically, as usual, all the other jurisdictions that I've been in to the west of the city. So, you know, the wind is bringing in the poison from the west. But down here in Phoenix, this is unbelievably bad. And you know, Northern California, you know, the West Coast, out in Maine, everywhere, I think it's bad. But I just wanted to comment that, you know, now being here in the Phoenix area for a couple of months, unbelievable, unbelievable. And none of this geoengineering is coming from commercial airliners. Absolutely not, because I can't have a
That's
clear
what we
view.
Find, too. We keep our telescopes on the standard commercial airlines, and there's some of them, 737s, particularly if they've got the Evergreen Aviation green stripe on them, they're chemming and jet spraying, and like you say, the military tankers, that's exactly what we see through the telescopes up here.
Right,
all the military jobs are all spraying.
Right. Here, once again, let me just be clear. I have a very clear sight of the air traffic pattern going into Sky Harbor Airport, arrivals and departures. And, you know, there's a pattern to this, okay, where I'm geographically located. And to the west of where I'm at, that's where the unmarked tanker jets are laying down the trails. There's no mistaking in my mind, because I bore witness to this here in this jurisdiction. This is not commercial airliners, you know, coming in and out of the airport here. This is the unmarked tanker jets. So, thank you very much for joining us this evening. I appreciate.
Well, thank you very much. I'm honored to be here, and I appreciate your note on that, and it checks out with everything we're getting here, too.
Great to have you, Lexi. Thanks for calling. Okay, next caller. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you. I actually have two questions. I believe this is a statement. I believe the fact that governments around the world are cooperating in this spraying, it's very alarming. And I also am an advocate of the conspiracy theory. I don't know how those who are responsible are being protected themselves. And clearly this is contributing to a global food shortage, population control. And my question to Francis is, do you think this could possibly be something happening to facilitate the New World Order agenda?
Okay, ma'am, I'll answer that the best I can. I'm not holding too much with conspiracy theory at this time. Somebody will have to convince me a little bit better. My theory on it now, and again, an opinion, one person's opinion is, of course, as good as the next, but I think it's just basic stupidity. You know, somebody in the military-industrial complex, probably from Standard Oil or Peabody Coal or any of their affiliates, said, we're going to have some problems, so spray to stop global warming. And the military, like good soldier boys, saluted and said, yes, sir, and you're paying $10 billion a year to have these jets flying back and forth, spraying up through a strontium, barium, and, of course, loads and loads and loads of aluminum without benefit of an environmental impact statement and things like this. And I think that's a crime. I think it's very much of a crime. Is there a new... that's the first part of your question. The second part, what about a worldwide conspiracy and New World Order? And I think we're actually already there to some degree or another, because the Supreme Court of the United States and Citizens United has declared by law that corporations are persons with personal constitutional rights that quite oftentimes are superior to individual rights. And the Bible says the Antichrist will be a person. Well, the Supreme Court has now made the giant corporations, the 1% that own 90% of the money in America and also own the money in Europe and also own the money in the third world, or practically owns the third world lock, stock, and barrel. This, I think, is the new Antichrist from a religious point of view, is these 1% that own the corporations that are ruling the show. Are these people inherently evil? I don't know, but they certainly have the money, and money talks and BS walks, and anybody who says congressman isn't owned by big corporations must be living on the planet Pluto somewhere. I really, really look at the whole thing and say it's just a really bad deal for ordinary people when the top 1% have all their money declared as persons by the Supreme Court, and therefore they can do all they want and put their money over the Cayman Islands so it can't be taxed, or put their money in the Swiss bank so nobody knows where it is and what it's worth. And if they run a little short of money, print their own money for that matter. So I look at it from a conspiracy theory that, by golly, the 1% own us. They are doing exactly what they want to do. And why do they do it to us? Well, because we're the consumers, and we're spending money on their fossil fuels, and peak oil is here, and they're making the energy party last as long as possible until they really have to give up their oil wells and give up their mountaintop mining, because if the wells are going dry and the mountaintops are all getting flattened out where there's coal, of course, or where there's oil accessible. They're starting to discover that, you know, even the Arabs are admitting now that their wells don't produce like they used to, and there's the final rushes, of course, toward the Arctic, where they'll put the last nail in the coffin of global warming. And it's a very depressing scene. The only thing I'm praying for is I hope to God that it doesn't hit us all of a sudden. And that, I simply don't know. So to close out the statement, I just say, welcome, fellow guinea pigs, to the experiment. We've never done this before. We don't know what the hell we're doing, but it might be some kind of mass corporate madness that's going on. Do I think the devil's at the bottom of it? Well, no. But I sure as the dickens think that money and corporate interest in making money without attention to morality is really the factor. Jesus would not poison his neighbor's air, food, and water, and that's exactly what the corporations are doing, maybe not deliberately as a conspiration theory to control population, but certainly as a result of stupidity, if nothing else. And I, as a theologian on the side, find that the results of stupidity and evil are very, very similar. I say stupidity is the little brother of evil. Okay, that's as much as I can say on conspiracy theory, but
yes,
I think it's basically stupidity.
Am I still on?
Yes, ma'am.
Yep, you're still on.
Another statement, I travel regularly, and I have been doing this now for maybe 7 years. I drive regularly from New York to South Carolina, and I spend time in Washington, D.C. At least twice a year. The spraying is, between those states, heaviest, extremely heavy in South Carolina, very little, extremely little in the D.C. area. It's picking up in New York and the other states. It's heavy in Pennsylvania, mainly over the farmlands. And I've made these observations myself, and I've been just watching for years. But I'm shocked at how little. I almost never see spraying in the D.C. area. Once I saw a jet with a short trail compared to South Carolina, where it's they are inundated.
Well, ma'am, all I can say is sounds mighty suspicious, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Well, thank you for your comment. I really appreciate it.
Yep, thank you so much, caller. We've got three more questions, and then we'll wrap it up. So please, when the next caller gets on, there we go. Go ahead with your question, please.
Hey, Francis, it's Helen. I just wanted to have a quick question. I noticed you mentioned earlier, you said how a lot of the rain from California is being hijacked out here to the east and the south. And I have a second part to ask you, but I wondered if you had an idea why they would want to take the rain from the west coast and bring it to the east. Do you have a theory on that?
You can't really logically, explain somebody else's mind or say, you're doing that just because you think. That's a logical fallacy right there. You can't get into their other mind. But I can tell you this much. They want to try and slow down global warming to some degree or another. And I think it's really just basic stupidity. It's an unforeseen consequence of something that was dashed into without benefit of an EIS. So my theory is it's an offshoot of stupidity, and that's all I could say about it.
The other quick question, and I'll make it brief, I found on some hay that a neighbor of mine harvested last summer, and it looks as this is when they were spraying us heavily. I'm feeding it this fall, and I'm seeing it's sort of a maroon or a purple color that has, it looks as though something's sort of fallen down on it, and it's stained some of the stalkier portions of the hay have this maroon fallout on there, and I wondered if you knew if any of these chemicals that are being used, if any of what chemicals might cause a residue of a color like that, if it could be coming from that.
I'd suspect a barium compound immediately. As to the actual color, there are many grasses, if you change the source of the hay that you bought, there are many grasses have natural purple in the stems. So as long as it's not on the interior of the stems and it's actually a deposit on the outside of the hay, then I would suspect something. Now, there's also, you're down in Georgia?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That could be stuff that comes from Africa, because the big dust storms they have in the Sahara and the Sahel, it's not unusual for little drifts of this very, 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 very fine powdered clay to make it across the Atlantic and dust Florida and Georgia and Mississippi now and then. That does happen, and it could be. And if you do sample it, probably might come out a little high in aluminum because clay's got a lot of aluminum in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very
that's
much.
That's
as
good
I
as I can say is there's possibly other explanations to that one just because of where you are, Georgia, Florida. It could be a dusting from Africa. If you want to do that, there's look in Scientific American magazine. I think it's a 2012, spring 2012 issue or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Might be 2011. But it's about the Sahara dust forms, and I think you can Google it. You can probably find it. But, you know, we can't blame everything on chemtrails, and if that is a highly visible reddish, purplish, maroonish-looking dust on the top of some grass, by golly, it could be Africa.
Yeah, well, it's not really dust. It's just, like, stained into the actual plant. So I suppose I could just send it off for analysis. That would be the best way to find out if there's anything strange in it or not. But
yeah, I would check for the basics, aluminum, barium, strontium. But again, if it's within the stem of the plant, it's could be just natural plant colors because there are all kinds of red pigmentations, xanthophylls, things like that.
Okay,
that,
well, thank
that
you.
That are in plants that it could be just completely natural, but it could be red dust from Africa, and it could be a chemtrail deposit. I just can't answer your question over the phone, really.
Sure. Well, thank you for those thoughts, and thank you for everything you do for us.
You're welcome.
Thank you, caller. Yeah, one thing... Francis, that I've seen, and I've spoken to a lot of people who've seen this as well, is we're seeing plants, and I have this right around my house here, where it looks like somebody has come with a paintbrush and splattered some kind of acid on many of the plants. So there's specks on the leaves that have just died, that are just brown and crisp, where the leaf around it is alive. And just seeing that all over that around the house,
you,
I've had many.
You start messing with the pH and putting funny chemicals into the soil, weakens the plant. There's all kinds of things like anthracnose, viruses, and various mildews and molds that'll make it look that way.
Uh-huh.
And you get a state biologist out there, and he'll look at it and say, "Well, that's just mold, mildew, frost damage, something like that." But the question that an ecologist like me comes up with is, so why all of a sudden is it there?
Right.
You know, there's got to be a reason for this. And I think
right.
as global warming progresses and chemtrails persist, you're going to see a lot more of this, and you're going to see the food supply of the nation is going to dwindle, and it will be reflected in American markets as higher prices for food. And a statement.
Yeah, I agree, and I would love you know, all this stuff is killing agriculture, and it's just going to raise prices. I agree so much, and I would love to do a show with you on how to keep our gardens alive. I think that would be.
Well, I'd be delighted to do it.
What's that?
I'd be delighted to do it. Although my expertise is pretty well limited to, you know, high elevation gardening, you know, something over 3,000 feet.
Well, I would love that because I had some problems this last year during some heavy spraying, and I suspect that something happened. But we have a next caller. We got two more questions. Please go ahead, caller.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Yep, you're on.
Hi, my name is Rose, and I am I don't call myself a conspiracy theorist, but I believe in being a concerned consumer. And in 2001, the CDC listed chronic lower respiratory disease as the fifth leading cause of death in the USA, with unknown causes for that. And also, I read that these chemtrails contain lead and also are linked to Magellan's disease. And I think that when chemicals are sprayed into the air, everyone knows they're going to fall into the ocean, into the soil, onto people's pores, and we're going to breathe them. It's going to get into our noses and our ears and into our pores. Now, everyone knows that lead and barium and aluminum are going to cause health problems. And I have seen chemtrails that are unbelievable, not only in my area in Southern California, but especially in the desert where my in a senior citizen community where my parents live. When I go there, I will start in the morning and I will see the crosses and the circles and the X's and the patterns. And if I stay there, I can see 2, 3, 4 planes in the morning. And by the evening, you can't even see the sky. You can't even
see
the
sky. Yeah, that's true. You mentioned all those crazy circles. It makes you kind of wonder whether those pilots in the cockpit are smoking or drinking something.
Exactly. And you know, you have to be, you know, and what's really disconcerting is to me when the government knows that chemicals are being sprayed upon people and food and crops and farms and soil and the ocean, and we're seeing a reduction of bees and birds and fish, that they are risking and jeopardizing the lives of millions of Americans, which makes me wonder about the UN's Agenda 21 for depopulation.
Well, ma'am, I'd say in a nutshell, yes, that's true. Yes, you're correct. And yes, it's worth wondering about. And to quote an old comedian, I think it was Will Rogers, money talks and BS walks.
Exactly.
So I think really that it's the military-industrial complex that controls Washington is the reason why this is going on, and why we don't have health care in this country is in Europe. You know, some factory pollutes the air. Everybody goes after the factory because that causes a public health problem and everybody's going to pay for it. So they tell the factory, you're going to clean up because you're making us pay money for health costs and taxes and everything like that. In this country, the way it works is the factory says, we're going to pollute the hell out of you and you've got to buy your own health coverage. Or you're going to have to pay for your own hospital bill. In the meantime, it's cheaper for us to dump it in the river and shoot it up the stack and, you know, the heck with you. And that's the that's one of the basic problems of America right there.
And it's really disconcerting because, I mean, I've been, you know, watching these chemtrails for years because I grew up in America and they weren't there before. And
that's a good point right there, ma'am. When I was little, you never saw this.
No, never.
This is something that's popped up in the last 10 years.
And there were planes in the skies.
Plenty of jets in the sky ever since I was born in, well, okay, I'll say it. I was born in 1947. I'm a war baby. Remember when I was a kid in the 50s, you'd hear a jet and everybody would look around because a lot of the jets didn't even have contrails in those days.
Yes, and even when they did, they dissipated. You didn't see
them. Yeah, they were gone. There it is way over there. You know, it's just that little teeny, teeny wisp of trail behind the jet.
And I would say I say it to people all the time. I go, do you know what those are in the sky? What? Oh, they're clouds. I go, those are not clouds.
Yeah.
Wake
you got to keep telling the people that. You know, I remember when I was a kid, skies were blue.
Right.
Now they're kind of whitish.
And, you know, it's really heartbreaking to know that the government is intentionally allowing this to happen, and whether it's for depopulation or because they want to create higher costs of food and water, and they want to...
I've heard this before, but really I think it's just plain stupidity and the drive for profit, because they make more money if they don't have to clean up their act, or for that matter, make a car that gets more miles per gallon, or make a product that doesn't pollute so much, or make a recyclable product. I think it's people want to make money, and the rest of us are just kind of like the guinea pigs in the grand experiment of what we're doing to the planet.
I understand what you're saying, but people are, you know, they're being affected by these chemicals. Everyone knows aluminum, barium, lead is going to affect you, just like in the vaccinations they're trying to mandate. And there are consequences to all of that, and people are guinea pigs. How many people have to die before you know, or get ill or contact cancer or respiratory diseases and suffer sinuses and headaches and everything else they're complaining about before people wake up and say, hey, government, enough's enough.
Yeah, that reminds me of something I wanted to get in here. Lead, while it's been banned in automobile fuels, is still perfectly legal in aviation fuels. So any plane flying overhead is spraying lead.
Mm-hmm. And then they're importing all these products that we used to make from China, and their head contain heavy lead because they have
more flowers. Child's toys, you saw that on the news at Christmas time, recalling a bunch of toys because lead was in the chewable parts, and some little kid was probably getting a nice heavy dose of lead from his Christmas toy.
Well, thousands of kids are dying in China because of the heavy lead, but they don't publicize it. And all of these little secretive things for profit or for depopulation or for increasing cost of living or creating the master-slave agenda is really serious, and I certainly thank you for all your information. And like I said, you know, in my opinion, all evil agendas start with a conspiracy theory.
Well, I can say, ma'am, is whether it's a theory or not, the results are pretty much the same. You can expect the people to get sicker, and you expect the people, the top 1%, is going to keep doing it to the rest of us as long as we, the American voters and people, continue to allow them to do it and say, well, I got other things.
Yeah, I have to watch American Idol.
Yeah. Don't bother me. Don't bother me with your lead and the paint thing. Don't bother me with your aluminum and the other thing. I'm busy watching American Idol.
Yeah, I think one of the important things, too, is to help people associate their illnesses with what's going on. And it's hard to do scientifically, you know, saying, look at this study, look at that study. But what you can do is point out that when heavy spraying occurs, everybody gets sick. You can also refer them to my story where I smell and taste them. And I know that when they spray certain types, everybody gets sick. And also that these things cause so many diseases, and we see so many sick people with all these different diseases. And we just have to ask the question, is this associated? Where is all this aluminum coming from? Where is all this barium coming from? And what effect does it have on you besides suppressing your immune system, you know, affecting your joints, affecting your mental
nervous
system, your digestive system?
All of the above.
Yep. Thank you for your call.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Okay, here's our last caller. You are now on. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Francis.
Hello.
Hi. I've recently been in contact with a former Forest Service employee, and he's well-respected, but what he told me, he disagrees with you. He said that he actually took tests in Mount Shasta of soil, rain.
Oh, this is Reynolds, isn't it?
And snow.
This is Reynolds, isn't it?
No, it's Steve Funk.
Oh, I mean, you're Reynolds. Yeah. Steve is the one, and I talked to him about his samples and his method. Yes, I can answer to it. Is that your question?
He's a good friend of yours, isn't he?
I'm not particular a friend, but an acquaintance.
For about 30 years you've known him, right?
Let's see now. Since around the mid-1980s.
Okay.
He was a forester. I was a wildlife biologist and range officer at the time. Also did a lot of botanical work.
Why does he disagree with you so much? His results are so different.
Okay, because I got into, he's a forester, and because I found spotted owls, a lot of the foresters got considerably upset because when I found spotted owls, that cut into their productivity awards in the Forest Service, and we got that data via Freedom of Information Act from Uncle Sam himself. But this, that's something that is more of a personal nature. But to answer your question about Steve Data's, Steve's big beef. Yeah, Steve's big beef was he said he's getting different numbers than I am. And to make it short for the people that are listening, of course he's getting different numbers than I am because the jet spraying is not constant, so you can always expect our numbers to vary considerably. You get more some years than others. You get them in different, the jets may have precisely the same schedule. You can say, well, since it's the same schedule, the deposit into the snow should be identical. Well, that's not so.
One of his tests detected equal amounts of silicon along with aluminum, which indicates soil, not spraying.
Well, he can sample soils all he wants, but we gather snow and not soil.
Have you tested for silicon?
Well, we, like I said, we gather snow and rainwater. We don't do soils.
He found that silicon in snow on Mount Shasta and in the rain in Mount Shasta, and the pH has not changed in Mount Shasta, according to his test.
Well, all I can say is I distrust his data then because he's of course got to buy a sample there. But in our data that we are getting, and also all the data we are getting all over the world, our data agrees with the people in New York, which agrees with the data in Pennsylvania, which agrees with the people in Maine, which agrees with the people in Australia, which agrees with the people in New Zealand, which agrees with the people in Japan, which agrees with the people in Alaska, which agrees with the people in Florida, which agrees with the people in Arizona, California, Oregon, and Washington. And we get very consistent results. Now, the numbers aren't identical, but we get very consistent results. And whatever Steve Funk is doing, I would say he's got some odd data there. Let him publish it and show it.
So who is this Reynolds person you were mentioning? Is this someone who likes to debunk chemtrails?
Yeah, he's a chemtrail debunker. If you want to see, we don't quite have the time left in the show now, but go to John White on Facebook, W-H-Y-T-E, and in that I debunk the debunkers. And this other fellow that I mentioned is one of the debunkers. He's a military contractor from Arkansas that works in Texas, and he was an early debunker of all the chemtrail data, said it was all a hoax and that it was nothing. And, of course, being paid by the military, you can understand where his position is. And, he would say such things like, the soil's never changed. Of course, that's not true. There are some soils in here, like I mentioned, that do have already, their pH is neutral. So those soils didn't change. And, of course, this debunker would come up with stuff like that. But in that Facebook page, we debunked all of his debunking and showed that his website and his protests were entirely without merit in all 7 or 8 cases. And we put out a video on it and said, there you are. And since then, we haven't heard a word from Mr. Reynolds.
Uh-huh. Okay. So they go to Facebook and look for John White, W-H-Y-T-E?
Yeah. They may pay attention to the spelling. He's got a Facebook page in there, and of course, it's an interview with me, and you can look there if you want to see the debunk of the debunkers.
Okay, very good. And what's the name of the video?
It escapes me right now.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you want to...
right here in Mount Shasta, and I've seen it myself and said, yep, he's got it, good.
I'll tell you what, if you want to email it to me afterward, I'll post a link to it near your interview.
I'll see if I can find it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
It's been a long time since I've looked at for it.
That'll be great. And, I will also say to all the people listening is that these debunkers are ruthless. I have gone on these sites after we've had phone conferences, and they take stuff that we say out of context. You know, there was one incident where I talked about how fear-based marketing is used by the public, by the corporations. Fear-based marketing is used to wake the public up about real concerns, like is there going to be a fire in your house? Well, you should have fire alarms. That's fear-based marketing. It's used to benefit people. And I was saying we need to utilize that in a sense so that we're telling people the truth about what's going on, because they need to be aware so they can protect themselves. Debunkers are keeping them from being aware of these dangers so they can't protect themselves. And they took that out of context, making it sound like I was trying to raise money and make money because I'm doing marketing and I'm using fear-based marketing.
Or just like this debunker that just showed up here, this Steve fellow, that there is some silicon in a snowdrift. Now, that doesn't bother me at all. Of course there's going to be some kind of dust somewhere on a snowdrift. But on the other hand, when you get an absolutely pure sample of freshly fallen snow, you know, down here in the valley, or you go up and like Angelina did in 8,500 feet up the mountain and get a sample of good, clean snow, yeah, there might be a little silicon in it from dust. Yeah, there might be a little silicon from some car driving by on a road, put a little dust into the sample. But we've done that and looked, and we find that the amount of aluminum difference that you get from, you know, you take a little pinch of dirt, and you say, this is sample A, this is sample B, take a little pinch of dirt, put it in there. The difference in the aluminum in the sample isn't more than single digits. You know, one turns out 486, and the other one turns out 483 for aluminum. And a little bit of silicon means practically nothing, you know, because it's not affecting. You know, what is the difference in percent between 483 and 486?
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, what are we looking at? Well, you know, one 100th of 1% or something like that. But, you know, when you're getting 61,000 micrograms per liter of aluminum in pure snow, you know, the amount of aluminum that we get in our local soil is, I ran it myself, is 13,000, 10,000. I think the highest we got was a garden sample, and this is years ago. It went 16,000. Well, if 16,000 is what you're getting in soil, then, you know, how can you get 61,000 in a water sample?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. A lined pond near Reading had 375,000 micrograms per liter of aluminum. That's more than Funk is getting, and he's blaming it on dirt. You know, and our local soil is only 13,000. So a little bit of silicon. What's the beef here? Sugar Pine Canyon Creek near Reading has over 4,600,000 micrograms of aluminum. And that's two tests. Both the tests hit over 4,600,000 micrograms of aluminum. Now, you know, this is a lot higher than soil that only hit 13,000. And here I've got over 4.6 million in a water sample. You know, doesn't this sound a little strange to say that a little bit of silicon showing up somewhere is negating all the samples?
Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, I've had experience with these people, and I used to fight with them in the beginning, and now I just don't pay attention to them. But they will look for something to argue about to try to make you look discredible in the eyes of people who don't know anything about this subject. And they just, I just want people to be aware that they just lie. They don't care. There is no conscience. They just act like sociopaths, and these people are very real, and they're out there, and I believe they probably must be profiting somehow from chemtrails in some way or another.
Like I said, it's a military-industrial complex. I'm pretty sure that's what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, or they're getting paid. In fact, I had a guy call me. I spoke to him. His military buddy got rich, bought a big house on the water, And he said, man, you won't believe what my ex-colonel or whatever his upper officer called him in, gave him a company with 200 employees, essentially, set him up. These 200 employees sit around and make fake Facebook accounts. Okay, this is a guy from the military. His buddy was doing this, and so his buddy called me and said, you won't believe what my buddy's doing. He was mad at his buddy, saying he has 200 employees that sit around and make fake Facebook accounts. They go on YouTube and make comments, and they have blogs, and they're spreading disinformation, and they try to stir people up and get them to fight against each other.
Yes, I've noticed that. So what I do with a site that I notice is obviously wrong is I don't even mention it. In fact, I was kind of, oh, gee, you know, this guy actually tried to publish this stupid non-factual data that, well, maybe he might have an honest lab report to it. That's possible. But when you got these other honest lab reports that say in 4.6 million micrograms per liter of aluminum in the water and soils only got 13,000, you know, which, by the way, is 1.3% aluminum, which is a pretty reasonable amount to have in soils for the Cascade Range. You know, I'm not griping anything about that. It's been here for the last million years. I don't have any problem with it. But when he uses a little doodad like that to say that everything is wrong, fine. And this other fellow that had the military contractor from Arkansas that works in Texas, you know, he did the very reasonable or non-reasonable logical fallacy. If I have about 100 points, I would suppose, in this Geoengineering What We Know paper, and the only places he could only attack 7 items out of 100. Well, gee, I went to school, getting 93% on a test is pretty dang good in my book. You know?
That's even considering that his attacks have any validity.
Yeah, and we went out and we looked at all 7 of his attacks and said, okay, we'll put on a video with John White and we'll debunk the debunkers. And since that, never heard of this character again, although I know he was in contact with this Steve Funk fellow and probably goaded him into doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And said, well, prove there's aluminum in the snow. I mean, there's silicon in the snow. And I would say, yes, you would expect a little silicon in the snow. There always is, because
yeah.
Dust comes from where it comes. You know, maybe it blew off a cliff somewhere at the 12,000-foot level in Mount Shasta, and a little bit of dust landed on the snow. Well, big deal. It doesn't affect the sample by certainly more than, probably not more than 2 or 3 micrograms per liter. And when you're getting numbers that are running 4,375,000 and normally in the 10,000s or 1,000s on these rain samples that we get all over the world, the fact that this guy from ex-Forest Service guy ran up the hill and found some silicon in the snow, no, it doesn't faze me a bit. It's just debunker activity.
Exactly. They're just doing what
they're being paid to do.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Well, I tell you what, Francis, it's getting late here on the East Coast, and I want to thank you so much for spending your time with us to help us understand and educate us about the all of these issues. I would love to do a future meeting not long from now, maybe you know, I'll be in touch with you about how do you keep your garden alive. I mean,
oh, sure. I think that would be a wonderful and very practical show. In fact, when I tell the people, you know, they ask me, well, what can we do about the chemtrails? What can we do about the military-industrial complex? That's one of the things I tell them is, well, start growing your own food. Be frugal. Insulate your attic. Insulate your walls, insulate your floor, don't drive your car as much, get a bicycle, play your own music on guitar and banjo. Don't buy a CD. Go organic.
Right.
Yeah, shop at a thrift store. Shop at a thrift store. And I tell them, just don't play the military-industrial complex conspicuous consumption game and call it good.
Right, right. And, well, this has been great. I really appreciate your time, and I want to do this again real soon.
Yeah, let's do the gardening thing. That sounds like a fun one.
Oh, absolutely. I don't want to just provide people with information about how bad it is, but we need to have solutions. And I think specific information is something I would love, and I know a lot of people out there would love it as well.
Well, I can do that. I'd love to do that with you. Stuff that would be effective across the United States and not just in a Western Gardens book, Zone 1, 2.
Yep. Yep,
you know,
absolutely.
I think that would be wonderful to get down to some practical things to do about the military-industrial complex.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, that would be a very uplifting and enthusiastic. I'd be very enthusiastic about that because chemtrails is kind of a downer.
Well, we're going to do it. We're going to do it. I'm excited about that, too. There's a lot of information. I'd love to, like I said earlier, I'd like to pick your brain about this stuff. But
yeah,
I do want to tell everybody
even
that.
If you get a bunch of people together and have pre-questions, because with a pre-question, a lot of time then, if I don't know the answer, I can do the research. You know, like the guy that asked about the diatomaceous earth and the chelation and chlorine dioxide, you know, geez, I didn't know what to say there because that's just not in my experience.
Yeah, good idea. Pre-questions would be great.
Yeah, and then we'll have a show and do those questions that come in by email just hit all the practical living that one can do to answer some of the idiotic things that our society is up to these days.
Yep, I hear you.
Like chemtrail spraying.
I know. It's amazing. Well, I do want to close this out and tell everyone that if you want to stay online and converse freely afterward, feel free to do that. I do want to tell you that Tuesday, February 12, 2013, at 8:30 a.m. We're also 8:30 p.m. That is, Clifford Carnicom is going to join us. He was with us once before and had tremendous information, so please join us for that. And we will have a future show with Francis, and we will have some great positive information. So I'm going to close out the recording, open up the lines for everyone to talk, and I hope that next week everyone will call back in and join us, and we will work towards, hopefully in the next few weeks, making this available as a live streaming simulcast online so anybody globally can listen live. Even though anyone can listen to the recordings at any time, those recordings are posted on globalskywatch.com/go. You can check back there often and find out what the next meeting is going to be about. They occur every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time. Thank you all for joining us. I'm going to open everything up so everybody can talk, and we'll see you next time.